The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Bears fans, we've got a treat for you. Our own Jack Silverstein sat down with the one, the only Patrick Manley to talk through Chicago Bears, head coaching decisions, and of course, long snapping. I don't want to delay things any further, so Jack, go ahead and take it away.
Okay, so Pat Manley, Jack Silverstein, we've been talking now on and off on a number of topics for almost a decade, believe it or not.
Getting old.
right there with you. So I want to start with the 2021 Patrick Manley Award winner, Cal Adomaitis of Pitt.
Yep.
He is the first NCAA-recognized All-American long snapper, which that's pretty cool. That's just another milestone for the position. Give us the scouting report. I mean, I know you and I have talked before about what makes a long snapper serviceable and then what makes a long snapper special. Obviously, this kid is special. Give me the scouting report. What's the story?
So what's been fun, now that we've had this award for 3 years, I've watched a lot of tape on all these college kids. And like I think we've talked before, they are all so accurate now. They're all really good. So the college game, they don't have to block. Majority don't have to block. So all they really have to do is just focus on snapping and then trying to cover. But all these kids now with all the training, shoot, they start when they're 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, and they're working on perfecting their craft. But the guys now that have been the finalists for the Manley Award, it's an overall package. You've got to snap, and then if you protect, how can you protect and snap? And then the other one is Chris Rubio came up with it. He's the founder of it. It's kind of just the mentality. Your mentality changes. You actually become a football player after the snap. And that's one thing I loved when I played was after the snap and after blocking somebody, I felt like I became a football player and you get to go down there and make a tackle. So these three finalists we had, they were as good, if not better, than all the other snappers as far as just snapping. But then their protection, a couple of them had to protect, but then just their mentality, how well they snapped. Big kicks is another thing, you know, fourth down, late in the fourth quarter, you know, field goals, punt snaps, game-winning snaps like that. So it's just the mentality of the whole thing. And then Cal just was just better than the rest. And that's why he won, but he just has that mentality where he truly turns into a football player after the snap. And he is a fun guy to watch.
We'll see him on Sundays. Where do you expect to see him in the draft?
Sixth or seventh round. He'll definitely be the one that's drafted. There might be a couple. Alex Ward, I don't know if he's going to go back to UCF. He was another finalist. I think he's got a potential to play in the NFL. But I think Cal's the number one by far. And I think he's going to be the number one on everybody's draft board. So I haven't really looked at who has the need of a long snapper. That can always change. I don't know the contracts, but I think he'll definitely be the number one guy gone. And I think it'd be, you know, for being a long snapper, if you're drafting the sixth round, that's a reward. That's an awesome thing. So I think he'll be a sixth rounder.
Great. Okay. So I know that the award is supported by Zebra Technologies and Bernie's Book Bank. Tell me about what the two of those organizations are doing to support the award.
Well, we'll start. I'll give you kind of the whole story. The background is, Chris Rubio and Kevin Gold came to me, and they're really the true founders of the award. They came to me and they said, listen, we need to make a long snapper award for the nation's top college long snapper. And I was like, heck yes, we have to do this. It's time. All these kids are scholarship kids. All 32 teams in the NFL have one, so it's a true position. And they said, well, we want to name it the Manley Award. I was like, oh, okay, all right, that's really cool. But enough of that. Let's talk about how do we get this thing done. And we talked to the people at the Maxwell Awards that run all the Home Depot Awards with all the other, you know, positional awards there. And one of the things you have to have is a charitable component to it. So my dumbass, I'm sitting there at a charity event, golf outing, and I've met Darren Utnick, who's the CEO, and Brian Florianis, who's the founder of Bernie's Book Bank, and I'm at their golf outing. And I'm talking to them over a beer about the Manley Award moving forward, what we need to get done. And they're just looking at me like, yeah, you're looking at one right now. And then finally the light bulb goes off in my head. I'm like, wait a minute, what about if we team up? So we did, and they have really helped facilitate this award to be where it is, where they'll be hosted at their facility. And Bernie's Book Bank, real quick, is a, they supply books for underserved youth in the Chicagoland area, where they get a bag of 8 to 12 books. I think it's 8 books right now. And it's just to see these kids' faces light up too when you go on these books distribution. That's the most rewarding thing. So it's an honor to be teamed up with them. And then now, with Zebra Technologies coming in, it's even a better sponsor. It's just a great, perfect little marriage here that, you know, they do all the NFL tracking of all the players. So like Jakeem Grant's touchdown the other day, talks to you about how fast they ran, how far they ran,
right,
all that stuff, ball placement. So it's kind of a cool little marriage because they're behind the scenes and they bring up stats that people don't really know. And this, we want to be as a long snapper, be behind the scenes. We never want to be known. So it's a neat marriage, but it's cool that they're involved with football. They do a lot of other things, you know, scans and barcodes, work with hospitals, you know, the wristbands for the hospitals that make sure you're the, you know, the proper patient and getting the right things done. But they're just a perfect marriage. I really look forward to working with them together. And I think with us, Bernie's Book Bank and Zebra, we've got a really bright future, and I look forward to the future winners to be coming back to Chicago, because when they come in for our ceremony, we go down and do this book distribution. We went down to the Hope School in Chicago just a couple weeks ago now, or last week, and just had a great time with the kids delivering the books. And just one real quick story about delivering these books to the kids.
Yeah.
Darren, you CEO, go, you know, you go into the classrooms, you give them their nice bag of books, the Bernie's bag and all that kind of stuff. And young girl opens up a book and she's like, oh my God, how did you know? And he's like, what are you talking about? He goes, I asked Santa Claus for the Trolls book. How did you guys know? How did he know? And he just said, he's like, you know, starting to cry. He's like, oh my gosh, that's how moving it is for these kids. And they love to exchange books and take them home to read them to their brothers and sisters. And so it's just been a really neat marriage with all of us. And we really appreciate Zebra being the presenting sponsor and helping, you know, really make all this happen. Because without them, you need somebody for help, and they're helping a lot. So it's been great.
That's awesome. It's been cool to see all this attention on this position. And I remember that, was it during the national championship game last year, the broadcast gave Thomas Fletcher a pretty extensive shout out. And, you know, I've learned, obviously, with the George Berman story, I've learned quite a bit about long snapping in the past year. So, it's been cool to watch.
Well, it's been awesome for you to help promote it and give us the backstory of where I got to learn from you as well. So I appreciate all the work you did and all the research and the people you talked to. I know that had to be fun, but that's still time and effort and work. So I really appreciate that for all that you've done, because when you wrote that story, that just shot through the long snapping community.
And did it really?
Like, there is a long snapping community. Like, yeah, all they Chris Rubio is making it, and he just, you know, just emails or texts are going, hey, did you see this article? And so it's been really neat to for you to help spread the word about, you know, long snapping and the history of long snapping, which is a neat story. If you're a football nerd, they need to get their hands on it, because it's a really cool story.
Yeah, definitely. That's the story of George Berman. Check it out at Windy City Gridiron. All right, we're talking special teams. This is pretty significant. Devin Hester is a semifinalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I looked at some numbers. I think it was since 2000. Everyone who gets to the semifinalist stage in their first year has gone to the Hall of Fame, with the exception of 6 guys. And all those 6 guys are on the ballot right now. They're all like newer guys. Are you hearing any talk in NFL circles about voters changing their tune on specialists? I know that Pompey, I know he's written about, he's going to be pushing for them, for Devin. Do you hear anything from voters or inside NFL talks about yeah, Devin is the guy and he should go in, to say nothing of Billy White Shoes Johnson and Mel Gray and Dante Hall and Josh Cribbs and Rick Upchurch. I mean, he shouldn't be the only one, but do you hear any, Brian Mitchell, do you hear anything about that?
I don't. I hear just more of coaches. I thought Chris Tabor had a great line the other day, you know, the Bears special teams coach, when he got interviewed about Devin, and just, he deserves to go in, but I haven't heard anything. I hope we start hearing more, but it was an honor to play with that guy. And my opinion is, if you change the game, which he did, and not just the game in general, but every game he played, he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, it's just, you could, you know, I got lucky to play with Brian Urlacher, who's a first ballot Hall of Famer. To me, he's at that level of what they were asked to do on the football field. He played at that level.
At what point did you think to yourself watching Devin, oh, wow, yeah, this guy's a Hall of Famer? Because there aren't any return specialists. There's Dale Sayers, but also obviously, a Hall of Fame running back. You've got Deion Sanders, who's also a Hall of Fame corner. You've got Rod Woodson, who's also a Hall of Fame safety. You've got older guys, you know, Bears, George McAfee. But you don't have any just, he's a return Hall of Famer.
Right.
Was there a point at which you said, oh, this guy's not just a flash in the pan. This guy has a legacy, and he's going to be or should be in Canton?
I'll give three examples, and it starts from game one when he won against Green Bay.
Yep.
That's when you saw his college highlights. We saw his speed and his ability in camp and all that kind of stuff. But then that first game, you're like, he just returned one in his first game. Holy blank, you know. Then you keep going, and he's doing these amazing things. And then I think it just came up the other day, the Rams game, where he had the two kickoff returns for a touchdown.
Yep.
And one of them was on the hands team. You know, they were there for an onside kick. The hands team, they don't block anybody, right? And that just, he just ran through like that, that was like, oh my God, he just did that. And that's the second one of the game. And then finally the Minnesota game up at Minnesota where we had to play outdoors. I think that's where he broke the record. Yeah. I was like, that seals it. That just seals it. I mean, it just, you know, his whole career just kind of took off. And yeah, there were some lull in there, but that's another testament to him that he never let him get him down. He had the belief that he would be back, and he did. And he just had a career where he was great all the time. And the other thing, Jack, is how hard he worked. When he first got there, Dave Tobe was hard on him. There's a little bit of this is not slighting Devin, but I also think times for players, it also helps when you come into the right situation, the right coach, the right program, the right mindset of Lovey with defense, special teams, that kind of thing. But Devin worked his tail off. He spent more time out there catching off the jugs, working on left foot, you know, whatever it was to make sure he was as good as he was as his craft. Obviously, his God-gift ability of being able to move and run, but he went out there and worked on catching everything, working on, you know, moving left, super, you know, all that just stuff. It just, how hard he worked in his relationship with Dave Tobe and how that worked together, where they could communicate with each other, talk about how much more work he needed. There were times where Devin, you could tell, like, come on, Dave, really? I got to go back over there. It's 2 degrees outside. And Dave would be like, no, let's go over here, make sure, because this game's going to be the 9 degrees game against the Cowboys. We need to make sure you're ready to go. And Devin, like, all right, coach, I respect you. Let's go get to work. And he's already pretty much the greatest of all time, and he's still putting in all that effort to make sure that he was that great at his craft. And I respect him a lot for that, not just his ability, but how hard he worked on it.
Yeah, and you said it, the peaks and valleys. And he's got peaks that are other guys' entire careers, guys who we talk about as you say, you know, when I talk about Devin, of course, there are other people who say, oh, but what about Dante Hall, or, you know, what about Mel Gray? And I'm like, yeah, it shouldn't just be one guy. I mean, let's get them all. But when you look at some of these other careers, their career is one of Devin's peaks.
Yes.
There, it's like what he did just in 06 or just in 07, and then he came back 10, 11. And then he had those years, 13, 14, I think, in both years, he led the NFL in kick return.
Yeah.
Total kick return yards.
Yeah.
It's like any one of those is a Hall of Fame peak for a number of other returners.
Yeah, I think his career speaks for itself. I really do. And I think the understanding now of hidden yardage in football, you know, what he did to the game, not just by fielding punts, you know what I mean? By punters kicking it out of bounds and shaking one 31 yards, 25 yards. And I think I would like to go back and look at punters net against Devin Hester. and how much he took out, like just the return yard or just what their net was of shanks. You know what I mean? How much that changes 15, 20 yards of the field. And that's him not even touching the ball. That's just his presence on the field. And I think that's what screams to me he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, because he changed the game so much.
Have you ever looked at Chris Cluey's history of tweets about Devin?
Yes.
They are
all the time.
Oh my goodness. They are so funny. They're a combination of, like, they're funny, they're deeply insightful.
Yes.
There's just deep frustration,
mm-hmm.
exacerbation, and just he throws his hands up at a certain point as well. It's like the whole experience.
And I know, because he was a very good punter, very, very good punter.
Right.
But there was something in his head. There was, I call it that little hook ball where he might be looking to put it outside the right numbers.
Yeah.
But he just misses it, and it hooks right down to the middle of the field, and the hang time is like 4 seconds, 3.8 or something. And then Devin just catches it. He's got that 20 yards to go. And I've seen that too often from Chris. I don't know if it was a mental block. And that's what I'm talking about. Some of these punters, they're just shanking it to the right 20 yards. And they hit that little hook ball. When they hit that hook ball, that's when everybody's like, oh, here goes Devin. Here it goes. There's a little 3.8 punt going 40 yards right in the middle of the field. He's going to take it. And he did. He did quite a bit.
Dave Tobe.
Yeah.
Are we going to see this man as a head coach?
I think he should be. And, you know, we talked about, or there was, you know, knowing that we were going to talk about Dave, and I thought about it more, and I've always said this, the man can command a room. To me, that's what a head coach has to do. I saw it in Chicago for all the years I was with him there. I got a chance to go out to Kansas City and sit in on a special teams meeting. He commands a room, and that's a room of everybody, right? Everybody talks about the special teams coaches, linebackers, everybody. Coaches O-linemen on field goal team, D-linemen on field goal block team, and the respect everybody had for him and how hard they played for him, that speaks volumes. And then thinking about him, you know, head coach can be a head coach, but I've seen some good head coaches, and they don't surround themselves with good assistants. Good assistants are just as important as the head coach, in my opinion. You have to have talented coaches, and we're seeing that right now in Chicago. We're lacking in some of those positions and key positions. But what I think now, what would separate Dave from other coaches, he's been around the league for a long time. He's worked with a lot of great coaches. He is friends with a lot of, you know, big-time people that can help him fill a staff with talent. And I think that's what you want to do as a head coach. You need that talent around you, and I think Dave could do that. He's worked with John Harbaugh, you know, Andy Reid, obviously, and then all these years in the NFL, knowing all these people that have come and gone through Kansas City, through Chicago, with Lovey, Bob Abbey, all these people that he's coached with, they would be very helpful with him to find a great staff. And I think that's what Dave could do, not only be the great leader and a head coach, but he could also build himself a good staff. And then the final thing is, most special teams coaches are your situational coaches that help your head coach. And I'm talking about 2 minutes, you know, all that kind of stuff that everybody's breaking down now on Twitter and calling everybody out about, like Brandon Staley going for it on fourth down last night. Dave is excellent at that. And I think he would be a very good head coach. And those are the three things I think that the reasons why I think he should be on the sideline.
You told me something a few years ago when we did our long piece for Windy City Gridiron, that the stars of the defense wanted to be on special teams. And that part of the reason was that they wanted to block for Devin. But listen, we saw them out there on the field goal block when Nate Vash had his return against the 49ers. What was Dave Tobe able to do to get these Pro Bowlers and all pros? We're talking Brian, Peanut, Lance, Alex Brown.
Blocking field goals. So
again, yeah. It was Peppers. Yes. What Hunter killing people. Yep. What was he able to do that made these defensive players want to take yet another snap?
Mm-hmm. It was the standard he set in that room. And it's just the way he coached. He was very honest. Some guys after meetings, you'd be like, man, I can't believe he just said that to whoever. Like, he would rip on Hunter. He would rip on anybody. They weren't giving effort, doing the right thing. He was very honest. And he wasn't – that's the thing. He was always honest. He called out what he saw. He never got on guys and kept carrying on them and degrading them. But the guys respected his coaching ability. And then that standard in that room was, we are going to be the best every year. And he carried himself that way in every meeting, on the practice field. He did everything, all the details. But it was just a standard he set for those guys. And I think a lot of those guys, the defensive players, saw the effort we gave on special teams, how good Devin was, how good guys blocked for him on punt return, Brad Maynard, Robbie Gold, you know, the effort we had on punt team covering. Brendan Iamadeja was the leader of that, right?
Yep.
Tim Shaw was another leader of that. We had a bunch of guys in there.
Corey Graham made a Pro Bowl.
Sorry, Corey.
Yeah.
No doubt. Like that's so we had those guys in there that were alpha dogs in the NFL as special teams players, and that standard was so high that you know the defensive guys came in like, wait a minute, we can't embarrass ourselves. These guys are out here playing this hard, and we get to play on a you know a play with them. Let's go get it.
Yep. All right. We see you guys tweet about this Bears team, good and bad.
Yep.
Right now it's bad.
Yeah.
I see you tweet about them. Charles Olin certainly does not hold back. Lance doesn't hold back. You know, Jerry is just super passionate.
Yep.
Trying to think of who else I see mixing it up on Twitter. I don't know, Donajay a little bit, but a lot of you guys, and you're honest on Twitter. What are the group chats like? What are the phone calls like? What are you guys right now talking about when you talk about this Bears game?
Everything we tweet, that's what I think is pretty cool, that we have a pretty special group that played in that locker room when I got to play there for however long I got to play there, and then we care. We care that much, and I think what we're trying to do is share our voice to Hallis Hall to say, listen, this isn't good enough. Something needs to change, and you guys need to, talking about a standard, you guys need to build a higher standard. And it's just frustrating. And I'd say right now that I'm sad because you had a change in 2012, you had a change in 2014, you had a change in 2017, we're going to have another change. That's embarrassing for an organization. So something's going on, and we just, all of us don't like it. We can't stand that we wore the Chicago Bears uniform and to watch what they're doing now and just the way it's going about and just the management to the coaching, to the lack of players, to the drafting, to it hurts. Honestly, it hurts to watch that on Sunday. And then obviously I've got to do the pre and post game. And Owen, right. My joke that really, we're already at this point with 5-6 games to go in the season. So it just hurts to not be able to talk positive about your team. But
right.
I don't know if we're trying to affect anything. I just think we want to give the fans a perspective of honesty of what we see and what we feel. And I just, that's what's neat about Chicago too, is that we feel connected still to the fans, that Twitter gives you that platform to get there. But I think we're all in this together as fans and players. And I always say this, I'll finish with this one about this. When you lose, man, the fans get on you hard. And it sucks. Like, you know, you hear the guys talking about the booing, firemen, how he sucks. But when you win, it's twice as good. The passion is awesome. I mean, you're the king of the town. The whole city feels better. Everybody wants to get up and go to work on Monday. They're so excited for the next Sunday. And that's what's great about the city. And I think that's why we all say what we say, because we want it to be back to that level and be sustained success. Not just 05, 06, 10. We want, like, every year, let's be fighting for the playoffs and make this organization great. And I think that's what's going on. But that we're just all being honest is what it is. And that's what we talk about.
Got it. We know that Coach Nagy he's probably out.
Yeah.
I would think, but gosh, you never know. I would think that Ryan Pace is out. Adam Hogue just wrote an interesting piece about why maybe that's not going to be the case. But the big question, the big symbolic domino is Ted Phillips.
Yeah.
What do players think about Ted Phillips? What kind of interaction do you have as a player with Ted Phillips? Mm-hmm. Ted Phillips was the numbers guy who they brought into the front office in 93 when the NFL added its salary cap to run that. And then he got bumped up again because he negotiated the Soldier Field lease. And now, you know, we were all so frustrated and angry in January. And he's one of the four guys who's speaking on behalf of the team,
Despite
the fact that he's allegedly not a football guy. What kind of interaction do players have with Ted Phillips?
I had a lot, and I still call him a friend because I spent so many years there, and I've had a lot of conversations, lunches with him, whatever it is. But I'll end with it's frustrating to see the man who is in charge. He's in charge. He makes football decisions, right? He hired Phil Emery with, you know, he makes the football decisions. He's involved. They say he's not maybe day to day, but they still have meetings once a week with the head coach and GM, right? So he's still involved. But if you take his record as team president, it's not good enough. It's that simple. If I'm an owner of anything else and I had an employee that was their record of how they, this business is two things, right? It's money and wins and losses. To me as an owner, it's wins and losses. Maybe they don't feel that way. I think maybe they prioritize money, and maybe that's why Ted Phillips is still here, because he's done a great job business-wise. Getting the stadium done, getting Hallis Hall done, helping facilitate this new thing with Arlington Heights. So if that's their priority, then he's done a heck of a job. But if I'm an owner, it's about wins and losses. It should be all about wins and losses. The NFL, you're going to make your money. Anybody can make money right now in the NFL. So if you put that out there, wins and losses, and he's the team president, it's not good enough. It's that simple, that something needs to change. You're just not doing your job well enough in that arena of wins and losses.
Last thing, is there a GM you want to see in Hallis Hall? Is there a head coach you want to see?
Well, we went through that one already with Chris Ballard, Bruce Arians. I mean, all these people that have been there. I haven't honestly broken down who I would like right now. Obviously, like Tobe, I think, would be great.
Yeah.
But my question is, how much change has really happened? Are they going to bring in a new team president kind of guy that's more of a football operations guy? So I don't know. I don't have any names. I don't. Okay. I really don't have any names. I would just be throwing stuff out there. And I got to do a little bit more research to make sure I can talk more on the radio going forward. But it's time to start doing that, because change, I think, is definitely going to happen.
So with Ted would stay, but he just needs to not be. It seems like he has a great deal of value to the business, but he just shouldn't be involved in hiring a GM.
I think he's been there long enough. How old is he? I don't even know how old he is. But if you're George and you really want to make a difference, and the one guy you need to get rid of, I mean, that's the one constant that's always been there.
Right.
If you truly want to make a difference, just say, hey, man, it's time for you to retire. We'll put you on the board, something like that, and we're just going to get you out of the building every day, and you're not making decisions. And that's the true change. If you really want to make a change, that's the one thing you've got to make.
Ted Phillips.
Yeah, I really think that. And it's, you know, like I said, he's a friend of mine, but it's just, it hasn't worked since he's been ahead of us since 1990, whatever it was. Yeah, so it just hasn't
99.
Worked.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it. I appreciate your time. How are you feeling right now?
Good.
About physically, everything, you feeling good?
Good. I had my hip replaced in February. That was the greatest thing I've done.
Okay.
I'm actually about to go golf here in about an hour, so.
Good. All right. Well, Pat, awesome to speak with you as always. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. We'll see you.
All righty.